What is going on, everybody? Jamie Shaw here on the Absolute Basketball Podcast. Today's episode, we have Furman head coach Bob Ritchie. We get to kind of deep dive into his philosophy as a coach, his quick rise, and his thoughts as to what future assistant coaches should do in order to rise in the profession and follow suit and get to where they want to go and achieve their goals and all that kind of stuff. It was a great talk. Really got to peel back the layers, both of him as a person, and then also of the Furman basketball program as to where they're going, where they've come from, what they have to look forward to, and their players and personnel and all that kind of stuff. Before we dive into the conversation, I ask that you please go ahead and subscribe to this channel. If you would, please rate it 5 stars. And if you would, leave us a kind review as to what you enjoyed about this podcast and what you enjoyed about this episode as well. That really helps us within the rankings. That really helps us to get out to more people, and we want to interact with you too. If you would please just leave us a review and let us know what you want to hear us talk about, questions that you want us to ask, coaches that you want us to talk to, and also what you enjoyed about this as well. That again really helps us win the rankings and gets these coaches' stories out to more people as they hear. But without further ado, here is Furman head coach Bob Ritchie on the Absolute Basketball Podcast with Jamie Shaw. Thank you guys very much. What is going on, everybody? Jamie Shaw here on the Absolute Basketball Podcast. I am joined today by Furman head coach Bob Ritchie. Bob, how's it going?
Doing good, Jamie. How are you?
Man, I'm doing well. Just trying to figure out, as we were talking off air, figure out this COVID-19 still day by day. But it looks like we're on the tail end of it, hopefully. So we'll see.
Absolutely. You know, it's different times. And, fortunately, it's, some good news has been coming out. And hopefully we're working responsibly to continue to play it smart, but hopefully we can get the balls bouncing again here soon.
No question. It can't happen fast enough.
Absolutely.
So I've heard you use the phrase further the man and better together before. What do these mean to you?
Yeah, so the Further the Man program is basically a systematic program that we have in place. It's, all year, and basically it's our Winning at Life program. And so it's the overarching umbrella for everything that we do in our program. And it's a huge part of our mission, just to grow people. And so, last year, I think we had 30. Sorry, man. I don't know why it keeps cutting out.
No, it's fine.
Last year we had, I think, close to 32 speakers that came in, and, a variety of topics, all kind of different type of speakers. And then, We bring in a tailor in the fall. We get custom-made suits for our guys, every single year. There's a mentor program in place that's, it's a little bit different than your typical mentor program. We don't want it to be, we're all going in this room at 7 o'clock at night. It's a forced event. It's much more organic. It's coffee shops, it's restaurants, it's houses. And it's really up to the mentor and the mentee to set those appointments and to make it more one-on-one, as opposed to this group functionality that doesn't usually lend a ton of fruit. And so, it's a whole program that basically we want to make sure at the end of the day that we're creating leaders. And, part of that in that also is the leadership council that I have of 4 players a year that I meet with individually, and collectively through the year. And, for us, back when I was an assistant, I used to really get frustrated when we would sit in staff meetings and really talk about our lack of player leadership. And I always thought, for me, I was a business major in college, and I've studied business, continue to study business, and I just think when we say things like that, it's really an indictment on us, because at the end of the day, the responsibility of leadership falls on the head coach and the coaching staff. And if we don't have good player-led leadership, then that probably goes back to some processes that we've got to look at beforehand. And I'm a big believer that every process is perfectly designed to get the results it gets. And so because of that, when you're not getting the results that you're getting in some area, you got to go back to your process. And, so for us, it's something that when you walk in our meeting room, you see Further the Man, you see everything that's come off of it. And then here lately, there's fruit behind it, right? I think this past week, they came out with all the APR stuff, which is retention and, graduation and all that. And there's, I think, 3 programs in the last 4 years that have had a perfect APR, and at the same time, won 24 games a year on average. And that's us, Villanova, and Belmont. And so it's a small elite group where basically we're trying to accomplish everything, right? We obviously want to win, and we want to win at a high level, But we're also trying to do the real mission of what we all intended and set out in this to do, which is to graduate, retain, and build people. And that's just a program that we have in place to be able to do that. Better together is more of a language in terms of our culture of connection. We want to have a culture of a connection in everything we do. And that goes into how we play. You know, Jamie, if you came to a game and you watched us play, we want to appear connected. And that would be, you know, how we move the ball on offense, how we fly around on defense. But that goes deeper than that. You know, that goes inside, you know, our meetings, that goes on campus. We want to be connected on campus. We want to be connected in the community. And so the idea of better together is just always understanding in everything we do, you know, we want to be greater than the sum of our parts. And that's going to come through the power of connection. And we constantly remind ourselves of that. And, you know, I think, again, it's one of the reasons why, you know, in our 3 years, we haven't had a single player leave this program that hasn't left with a Furman degree. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that's rare in today's time. And I think a lot of it is because of those two initiatives, with us understanding and preaching and teaching and making our players live by this idea of being better together, but also having a real program of growth for our people outside of the game that makes it to where they feel like, hey, you know what? I'm growing and I might not be averaging 10 points a game. I might not be playing quite as much as I want, but I've got all these other areas that I'm growing in. And I feel like I'm progressing towards manhood and I'm getting better and I see growth in my life. And we just had the highest GPA, the director of academics said in his whole tenure here. And he's been here 10 years. And so, you know, there's a lot of different fruit that's coming out of this. And that's what we all want to always make sure that we measure ourselves up against.
So growing up in Florence, you played at Florence Christian, won a state title, named state player of the year. You know, you still hold numerous, you know, records there and stuff. What type of basketball player was little Bob Ritchie?
You know, I was just an okay ball player. I could shoot a little bit. And, you know, I was a point guard. I wasn't overly athletic. And, you know, genetically, I was average to below average. But, you know, I could see the game and I could shoot. And those two things allowed me to, you know, go on to play Division II basketball. And really, it was, you know, I was very competitive, as you would, you know, that's kind of how coaches are wired. But, you know, I always, I just love studying the game. I love, you know, for me, and a lot of, to be honest with you, Jamie, a lot of my personal convictions, it comes from those 2 years at Florence Christian, because especially the idea of better together and connection and playing together. You know, my junior year, we won 15 games. We were right at 500. I think I averaged like 24 a game and, you know, broke the scoring record. And, you know, but we got knocked out in the first round of the playoffs. And we basically returned the whole team the next year. And, you know, we go 28-2. We win 26 games in a row. We beat Porter Gaud, Pinewood, and Hammond to win the state championship. And, you know, little old Florence Christian. And you know, we go and win the state title. And, you know, they never won one in skis and haven't won one since. And, you know, it was because that group bought in to being better together. And I think that year only averaged 17 or 18. And, you know, but I was able to set the assist record in the games and in the season. And, you know, at the same time, we won and we defended and we had a grit to us and we had a toughness about us. Whereas the year before, it was just, hey, let's go out here and see how many points we can score. And, you know, that kind of ironed in, you know, it kind of ironed in on me early, just seeing the dichotomy of those two teams. And, you know, so it still has an impact on how I coach today.
And you went on and you graduated from North Greenville in 06. And immediately you get on staff at Charleston Southern. Was coaching kind of always your goal, your end result?
So, you know, I always had it in the view. You know, I grew up in a very, you know, my dad was a physician and, but we all, you know, basketball is kind of in the blood. And, you know, I grew up in Columbia early before we moved to Florence. And, you know, it's one of those deals where, you know, I went to South Carolina camp in the summers and, you know, I got to see Coach Fogler, and it was at a young age. I remember sitting there at camp thinking, man, this guy has the life, you know, I mean, like this is his full-time job to be around college players and to be around the game and to be able to teach the game and coach the game. And, you know, I was obsessed. I mean, the year they won the SEC, you know, I watched as many games as I could. And, you know, I was just kind of all in at a young age. And, you know, then Coach Holtz comes to South Carolina and, you know, we would go to a lot of those games and, you know, to see a team that hadn't won, and then all of a sudden, you know, the two Outback Bowl appearances, and to see how he did that, you know, and just them arriving, you know, to summer school and taking their keys and, you know, building the team. And then I got enthralled with, to be honest with you, I mean, I still have all these memories as a kid, Derek Watson's recruitment, you know, between South Carolina and Tennessee. And I would get on Phil Kornblue at night just to hear the updates. And it was one of those deals where I just started to see that, like, a lot of my passions were in coaching, you know, in terms of, you know, the ability to compete, you know, be around people, the game of recruiting, you know, to be able to lead, to be able to have a little bit, you know, we've got a little bit of a, there is a business side to college athletics today, and culture and being able to create that. So, you know, there was a lot of different factors that I looked at and thought, you know what, this could fit me. And so when I got done with college, I was a business major, and you know, it was one of those situations where, you know, I had a 3.9 GPA and I had some opportunities to go to grad school, and it just kind of hit me like, hey, let's go get an MBA and then try to get a GA spot. And then after 2 years, let's evaluate it. You know, can I go into coaching? Is there a path? If not, I've got an MBA and I go into the business world, you know, do something entrepreneurially. And that was kind of my view. And long story short, Barkley ended up offering me his ops job the middle of that July. And instead of, you know, I was working 6-7 camps and going all these high majors trying to get a GA spot. And he really convinced me that, you know, I could begin to do some real work. And, you know, sure enough, I took the job, and then I was on vacation with my wife's family. At the time, she's my fiance. 2 weeks later, and he calls me up and he says, hey, you know, our third assistant just took a junior college job. I'm going to bump you up. And so that was my break. You know, I was 23 and I was third assistant, and I had no clue what I was doing, but was able to get some hands-on experience early, was recruiting in the spring of that first year, and, you know, got to get more active on the floor each year. And, you know, my third year, I was calling baseline out of bounds, and that's when I really figured out how hard the game was and how much you had to study and how much you had to grow in terms of film work. And then my last 2 years with Barkley, he let me call the offense. Mm-hmm. And I really realized how hard coaching was at that point. And I say all that to say, you know, I worked for a boss that let me do things that he put accountability on me. But at the same time, I got to see, like, I got to feel it at, you know, 26, 27, the real accountability that goes into this and how much preparation it really takes. And I thought that was critical in my development as a coach.
So at 23 years old, what would you say, you know, with no kind of real experience in coaching and whatnot, what would you say the biggest eye-opening moment was for you as to jumping into the saddle and being on the court immediately, being, you know, on the road immediately? What would you say the biggest adjustment was those 6 months, I guess, just breaking into it?
The best story I can give you for that would be, you know, and there's a few things I would tell you, but the first one is you've got to understand – how big the load is, especially when you're getting in. I feel like a lot of people, they just say, all right, college coaching, you get to wear suits, you get to be on the bench, you get to go to games. It's going to be a lot of fun. But, you know, my first year was travel and it was video. You know, those were my two big jobs. And, you know, I just sat and listened on the floor. You know, I was trying to learn the system. And, but I had travel, which was very tedious and very hard. And then I had film exchange, which back then it was, you know, VHSs were starting to phase out. You had to literally go to the FedEx place and you had to get the slips and you had to make sure they were there and you had to be organized. And here's what hit me, Jamie. And this kind of sums up our business in a nutshell here. I thought I was doing an incredible job at those two areas in terms of just the time I was putting in and how important they were. And, you know, there weren't a whole lot of fumbles and, you know, I'm just kind of trucking along. And we go to Las Vegas and we've got to go, we're in this tournament. And we're going to go play at Southern Cal. We're going to go to New Mexico. And then now we're going to fly to Vegas for basically a 4-team tournament. And it's going to be a 9-day trip. And I've got to do all of it. Okay. And so, so now basically what, can you hear me?
Yeah.
So now we finished New Mexico and we're flying to Vegas. And Barkley told me, he said, hey, I want you to go early. And I want you to get there before we do so you can make sure everything's set up, the wives we're going to fly in and different things like that. And it just so happens, to be honest with you, you know, truth be told, I wasn't real happy about this because I had to get to the airport at like 6 a.m. And I got to the airport and the flight just sits there forever. And we're in the plane for like 2 hours and we don't take off. So now I'm starting to think like, man, I just wasted my morning. Well, we deboard the plane, and the next flight I'm going to get on, it happens that it's the flight that New Mexico's on. And at the time, Dwayne Broussard was on staff in New Mexico. He's now at TCU. And I got to sit with Dwayne on the flight to Vegas just because it was a Southwest flight and pick where you want to sit. And I'm sitting here telling Dwight, he's asking me kind of what do you do? What are you in charge of? And he looked at me like, really, he just met me. And he looks at me and he's like, hey, I guess you don't want to do this very long. And I was kind of like, what is this guy talking about? And he said, you know, nobody's going to hire you because you're good at travel and you're good at film. Like, you better get out there and start recruiting. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, you know, nobody's really asked me to recruit. And he said, well, that's the business. Like, nobody's going to ask you to do anything. Like, you have to go figure it out. Like, the only people that survive in this profession are the ones that just go figure it all out. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to wait for people to task you and you're going to wait for people to delegate you, you might as well just go into business world. And he said, you need to go home and you need to start recruiting. And this is a great lesson for all of us. He took the time. You know, I wouldn't say it was every Friday, but I would probably say every other Friday that spring, Dwayne Broussard called me and checked on me and asked me what he could do to help me to begin my recruiting journey.
Wow.
And, you know, he basically, the first thing he told me to do is he said, go back and figure out an area where you're not recruiting well. Okay. And for us, we had nobody from Georgia on the roster at the time. So I called him and he said, hey, I'm going to send you all these summer reports, go through them and just start cold calling. And so I'm doing like 20 cold calls a day. And, you know, side stories. I mean, the stuff that came out of those cold calls, you know, at the time, this was January of 2000, and I guess it was seven. Mm-hmm. Andrew Gadlock at that point had zero offers, right? We were the first to offer him. Jamarco Warren had zero offers. We ended up getting him. He's second all-time leading scorer in Charleston Southern history. And there was also the name is drawing a blank. He actually made it to the NBA, went to Providence. I can see he was at Tucker. I'll think of it in a second. Guard. But he had nothing, right? Providence took him in May. And so my point is there's still all kind of people out there and available, but I'm doing all these cold calls. Anybody that's been in the Buck Dome, I didn't have an office. Okay. I was on a ledge inside the arena. They had classes till noon, right? Like, I had to wait for Murray and JD to leave to go home to sneak into their office to get on the internet. And I was leaving at like 11 o'clock at night. But I had to figure it out. And so fortunately, you know, I was able to be the primary on a couple guys that first spring. And, you know, it kind of pushed my journey, you know, but it was that truth that Dwayne gave me. And it was also his willingness to mentor me in some ways that I feel like sometimes we lose in coaching.
That's a great segue into kind of honing in on that a little bit more. You know, from 06 to 2017, you really cut your teeth as an assistant coach, both at Charleston Southern and Furman, on the back of recruiting, but also at Furman really honing in on analytics and stuff. What would you say is the best way to make your name as an assistant coach?
Do a great job where you're at, in point period. We spend way too much time worrying about the group that we have assembled as opposed to the growth that we're getting in our own personal journey. And to be honest with you, it's nauseating. We're always in this business, and I see it all the time, but assistants are always looking, where do I go next? Where do I go next? How can I meet this guy? How can I connect with this guy? I got to get this job. And if you will just be fantastic where you're at, right? And if you'll just grow and you invest every single thing you have in the program, you're there, it's going to work out for you. I'm not a head coach today if I tried to jump around. The reason I got rewarded my job at 34 years old was because I tried to bloom where I was planted, and I tried to put everything into the place that I was at. And I wasn't afraid of taking a bad job because that was the only job I was going to get. You know, I had no resume. I had no background. You know, I didn't play in the ACC. Like, I had to go be great where I was at. And so the other thing I'll tell you in that is, you know, out of my 11 years as an assistant, I only was a part of two winning seasons. Mm-hmm. Okay. And six of those seasons, we were in the 300s in KenPom. And a lot of times that can be demoralizing for people. And they run from it, and they fear it, and they hate it. I chose to learn through it, and I chose to in those moments where we and the good thing about that, and if you go back and look at that, when I'm mentioning the losing in that, we were building, right? Both places we were building at the same time, and a lot of times we don't want to be a part of that, right? Like, that's too hard. We want to go find somewhere where we can attach top three job, right? I need a top three job in the league. Well, who's entitled to that? You know, like who's just if we're all just chasing these top three jobs, what if you go make it a top three job? And that's been the thrill at both places I've been. You know, when I left Charleston Southern after 5 years, we had just won 16 games and we had been recruiting really well. And we knew we were set up for great success going forward. And I turned down jobs. You know, I turned down a job a few years before. And but I felt like the job was completed in terms of where I was at in my path. But I'd never ran from it, you know. And then same thing at Furman. When they decided to make a change with Jeff Jackson, all of the people in the industry told me to run. You know, I mean, I didn't have a single person telling me to stay. And it was a conviction. It was a decision I made. First of all, when Nico and I met, we had an aligned vision of what it was going to take to get Furman where it needed to go. But it was also a drive in me that I wanted to see it all the way through. And I thought I was crazy enough to think that we could win here. And a lot of times in this business, like, you need that. You're going to have that passion and that conviction and that type of perseverance to be able to get the goals you want, as opposed to just hopping around and going job to job.
And in the 2016-17 season, Nico took the great job. And you, as the interim head coach, got to coach in the postseason game. What was that transitioning like from assistant to head coach in just a matter of days? Like, how wild was that ride?
It was wild. And, you know, it was one of those deals where, you know, I think we got beat by 1,000 that night. And, you know, it was a lot for me to you know, ingest at one time. But I felt like once I got the job and I had that off season to really reflect on it and prepare, it showed me a lot that was very critical for my growth as a coach. And, you know, that all happened really fast. We beat Campbell on a Saturday, and, you know, Nico took that Drake job on a Sunday, and then we either had to play a Tuesday night or a Wednesday night. It was fast. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of things that I had to make sure. I had to make sure the players were good. I had to make sure that, you know, they were obviously nervous and there was a lot of emotion. And, you know, it was hard to manage, but I wanted to be there for them. And I knew the job stuff would figure itself out. But at the same time, you know, there was a lot going on in those couple of days that was a little just crazy.
How important do you think it was for you to coach in that game, moving ahead to the next year, to find your voice as a 34-year-old head coach?
Well, I remember the biggest thing I remember from that game is I had the biggest headache after the game. And I remember the timeouts just, you know, always feeling like I had to be talking the whole time and always feel like, you know, you had to be so animated. And when I got back to the hotel, I just was like, man, there's no way you can coach a game like that. Like, it was too much. I mean, just trying too much, right? Just trying to just worrying about every single thing in the game instead of finding, you know, each year I do this, there's more of a natural flow in the game that you try to get to, especially with your players, and allow them to go play. And, you know, that was the biggest takeaway of just understanding that there's a lot of things that happen in the game that you don't control. Yeah. And the things that you do control are usually practice and the habits that you have in practice. And, you know, for me, if you watch now, I tried to have a pretty controlled demeanor on the sideline. And I try to let those guys go play, and where we try to really get to it is in practice. And if I'm gonna have that intensity, you know, we want to do that on the practice floor. But when it gets to game time, like, I want to be free. I want our players to be free, and we just want to go fight to play to our standard.
I saw somewhere where you said high standards and deep caring must coexist to create a winning culture. You can't have one without the other. If you have high standards, but don't care, you're militant. And if you have low standards and care deeply, you're too soft. Talk a little bit about that and the voice that you've adopted as a head coach.
Yeah, I think for me, you know, a lot of times my biggest mistakes in my 3 years have been where I've been absent of truth in some form or fashion. And a lot of times you worry about the responses, you worry about the parents, you worry about the players, you know. And I think on the flip of that, the successes and the great moments that I can reflect on as a coach, they're all surrounded with a high standard that's non-apologetic, but a lot of care where these kids can trust and they can grow. And I think the two have to work together. And I think there's a conflict in our business a lot of times where we view this as a seesaw. Like, if I'm going to be a truth teller and I'm going to hit them with the absolute facts, then I'm not going to be able to have a good relationship with them because it's always going to be tense, right? Or if I'm going to have a relationship with them then a lot of times, you know, I want to be cool with them. I want them to like me, and I want these guys to be happy. And then, that creates this idea. Well, I got to hold a little bit of the truth from them because, you know, maybe they won't like me. And it's, and, you know, it's a bunch of lies. And what you realize is you need to have those as high as they can both be, right? Like there's no greater gift we can give our players than the truth. All right. And that's the only way they're going to ultimately grow at the rate they need to. And we want to have an environment that just is transparent and truthful at all times. But it's got to be wrapped in that care and that trust that these players know that we've invested enough in them in the Further the Man program and different things that we do culturally and just regular conversations that they know is coming from a great place. Mm-hmm. And I think kids today, I think they're constantly challenging motive and they're constantly analyzing our motive as coaches. And we can sit here and we can tweet whatever we want. We can put what we want on shirts and on locker room walls. If those kids don't think that we have a pure motive, there's no chance they're going to give us the best they have, right? And so it's always in those moments, you know, that you look back and you're like, you know what? The truth will set you free, right? As the good book says. And it's the same thing in coaching, right? Like when you can have truth, but at the same time, you can really make sure that you love on them and that you care about them. We're highly invested in our players. I mean, I've got a former player right now living in my basement, you know, and we're working through a GA opportunity with two Big Ten schools that we've worked to get them. And, you know, we're involved in getting them jobs and we're involved in their lives. And, you know, it's not just something we sit here and just, you know, we just throw it on Twitter. Like it's something that we put a lot of legs under. And so those two things, I never want to be apologetic on our standard. I tell recruits all the time, like, if you come here, we're going to ask more of you than anybody in the country. All right. You're going to have to do a ton. All right. You're going to have to play ball. You're going to have to go to class. You're going to have to go into community. You're going to have to do a lot of service projects. We're going to have to Further the Man program. There's going to be stuff thrown at you at all times. So our demands, we want that high because that's where the growth takes place. But at the same time, we want to care at an elite level.
In the non-conference over the last, since you've been a head coach, Auburn, Alabama, LSU, Villanova, Butler, Drake, Duke, Tennessee, et cetera, how important is scheduling for you?
It's very important because, you know, I want to get challenged. And, you know, I want our team to get challenged. I want our program to get challenged. We're also trying to expand our brand, you know, and make people more aware of our program, which I think you've seen in the last few years. And I don't think you can do that hiding from scheduling. The downside of that, you know, the disappointing side of that is, unfortunately, you know, regionally, there's not as many people open to playing us. And, you know, that's made it a little bit tougher to where I want my guys to be in big time games, because at the end of the day, when the games that we want to play in March, they're going to be big time games. And so that's the goal of the program. And so why wouldn't we want to do that in November, December? And, you know, I get it. Everybody wants to try to schedule wins, but, you know, the games to me, and I might just be flawed here, I have a lot more fun in them. You know, like when we played Loyola here and the place is sold out and it's rocking. I mean, it's fun. We played Wichita State here in the NIT and it's sold out. Can't get a seat. You know, you're looking down the sideline. You got a Hall of Famer down there, and you know, it's a big time game. We were on the losing end of it, but like that made our program better. You know, and being able to compete against those guys, that makes you better. All of a sudden, you know, you start to get in those games and you're like, hey, you know what? Maybe we belong here. Like maybe we're prepared for this. And then you win a couple of them and those can be transformational moments for your program. And so, you know, I want to schedule the best. I mean, we're going to Louisville next year and we're talking to some others and, you know, I wish we could get some more, you know, especially regional mid-major games that are just high level games. But that makes college basketball fun. I think at the mid-major level, we're chasing environment, right? We don't have the same opportunity TV-wise that the high majors do. So we're chasing environments. That's how students are going to take a part. That's how communities are going to take a part. So it's great if we go schedule 9-1s and games that we think are going to be wins. But in order to chase environment and to get as much energy in the building as you can, we've got to be willing to schedule tougher. And I'm hoping that's something that's going to trend in the future.
Last season, you lost a single home game. You lost three each of the previous two seasons before that. What type of advantage do you guys have at home? And how important is it for you to hold serve at your place?
You know, it's something we talk about a lot. You know, we obviously want to protect our house, and that's really important. You know, we've gotten, you know, the people try to recruit negatively against us with Timmons Arena all the time. And what we always point to is the winning percentage in the building. And, you know, that's what we're all trying to do here. We're all trying to win games and we're all trying to have environments. And so what we've been able to do, if you pulled on a Furman game from, you know, 6-7 years ago, I mean, it's going to look depleted in there. And that's what we focused on. We focused on building environment. And, you know, we play people with big buildings and, there's not many people in them. Right. And so what we've been able to create is an atmosphere that's hard to come into, and it's loud and it's a little bit on top of you. And our guys have just taken a lot of pride in it. You know, it's something we want to really make sure that we show our fans a great experience, and that the way we play is inspiring. And you know, that's really, really important to us. And we want to show the fan, you know, a team that's working together. We want to show a fan of a team that's willing to play hard. And we want to show a fan a good brand of ball that's including five guys and we're working together, because I think that's what people want to see. You know, people at the end of the day want to see something, a group that's bigger than themselves, and, you know, that are working together and doing things that people didn't think they could do. And so, you know, and now we've poured into the Well, you know, and this year we played three games at the Well, averaged 5,000 a game in those three games, you know. And I think that anybody that would have said that at Furman basketball, hey, you're going to play downtown, you're going to have 6,000, 5,000, and 4,000 at those games, you know, I think that would have been a joke, you know, a few years back. And so it just goes in again. I mean, we're trying to push forward, right? Like we're constantly trying to see what we can do better. There's nobody in our program that's just trying to hold on and sustain, right? Like we want to continue to push forward. And, you know, that's in a number of different areas.
You only lose one player of your top six from last year. Obviously, Jordan Lyons is a big loss. But returning five of your top six off of a 25-7 team, what are your expectations for the team next season?
You know, we want to keep growing. We want to keep building. And, you know, we still obviously have some goals out there. The one big one is to go win the tournament in Nashville and, you know, get this program in the NCAA tournament. And, you know, it's been a long time, and it's something that drives us every single day. And it's something as a staff and as a program, as players, you know, we take a lot of pride in. And, you know, we're going to cut that net down soon. And, you know, it's something that we continue to work towards. But, you know, it's a great group coming back, and we're going to miss Jordan's leadership. We're going to miss his infectious personality and just his courage. But, you know, the cool thing is, you know, Mike Bothwell got to start some later in the year. And the way Mike Bothwell was playing, you know, the last month or so of the season, I mean, he was playing at near an all-conference level. And, you know, so we've got a lot back. And I think anytime, you know, to much is given, much is expected. And, you know, we embrace that and we want that. You know, I tell people all the time, beats the heck out of the alternative. Yeah. And, you know, so we want to embrace that target. We know the target's there, but we want that to motivate us just to continue to be our best. And, you know, usually a lot of times that expectation can drive preparation. And we want it to drive our preparation a lot more than we want it to drive our paranoia of, you know, what if we don't do it, right? We want to think more on, hey, this is what we're going to do, and this is how we're going to prepare so that we can do it. And, you know, our guys are locked in right now, you know, even in this time. I mean, the things that they're doing in the midst of this crisis has been very encouraging, and the personal investment that they're putting in, and also the things that they're doing to collect themselves as a team. And some of it's obviously coach driven, but some of it's been player driven. And it's been very encouraging. It's a motivated group. You know, the season this year didn't end how we wanted it to end. And we fully own that. We take full responsibility for that. And we got a group that's determined, that's got a little bit of an edge to it, that we want to go out there and we want to make that right.
Specifically, Noah Gurley and Clay Mounts are right on the verge of breaking out. You know, both of them third team all conference this year and stuff. What type of steps do you need them to make heading into next season?
You know, both of them are a little bit different. Obviously, Clay's kind of your hybrid wing, and you know, very, very good shooter at 6'7". You know, can also put the ball in the bounce and you know, get the ball to the basket. He can also post a little bit, especially when we have a favorable matchup. I think for him, you know, just getting a little more comfortable with the ball in his hands. You know, can we get him in some ball screen situations? And then also, it's like I've told him, like I want him to go out there and take that next step from a mental side of the game of just knowing that, hey, I belong and I'm really, really good. I've prepared for this moment, and to go out and do it, you know, and understanding that you're going to be out in front of this. You know, Noah's a unique player. Both of them got a chance to be fantastic, you know, in terms of what they can do. The ceiling's really, really high for both of them. Noah's a really good back-to-basket player. And he can also step out. I think he was 39% from three this year. And, you know, for Noah, we want to continue to put a little bit of weight on him, but he's got the ability to play all over the floor. And if you put a small on him, we can take him down low. If you put a big on him, we can stretch it out. And so for him, again, just fine tuning some areas, you know, putting 10, 15 more pounds on him, especially in his lower body, getting his base a little bit stronger. And then getting his, you know, I think the more that we can continue to stretch his game out while we continue to perfect his craft down low, I think that's going to make him a force in this league and something that's going to be really, really hard to guard.
Losing Jordan Lyons, who we talked about before, and then Trey Clark, the transfer, you bring in a two-man recruiting class this year with Garrett Hine and Joe Anderson. How do you feel about those two guys coming into the program?
Love both of them. I've quickly fallen in love with both of them. And, you know, they're made of the right stuff. You know, whatever it is, they both seem to have it. And, you know, just watching them and being able to observe them, especially over these last couple months, it's been really neat. And I would expect both of them to compete for playing time. Minutes are obviously going to be tight this year with as much as we have coming back. But I would expect both of them to compete for minutes. And they both seem hungry. You know, they both seem to have an edge to them. And I think in our environment that does really, really well. And, you know, they're constantly hitting us. I mean, both of them have hit me directly. Like, coach, can we watch film together? I want to get an early jump on the offense. You know, what can we be doing here? What can we be doing there? And that's just unique. You know, that's just unique. And so both of them come from great families. They've got great support systems. They came from two great programs, you know, so they're both used to winning. And I think the transition's always real. But I think both of them, because of their structures prior to here, I think they both have a chance to be able to expedite that transition a little bit and to put themselves in a position to help us.
Obviously, we've been off for a while with the quarantine and the COVID-19 stuff. The NCAA just passed a ruling, voluntary workouts coming back on June 1st. What is Furman's plan kind of moving forward past up to and past that June 1st date?
You know, they're still working through that. And, you know, I have great leadership here. My AD, Jason Donnelly, is phenomenal. He was on Jay Wright's staff for a while at Villanova before he moved into administration. So he's been in our shoes before. And, you know, our president, Dr. Davis, she's really gotten behind our program and she's really become a huge basketball fan. So they've got our best interests at heart. You know, they also have a university to run and they've got the safety and the well-being of our students. They've got to tend to. So I'm not really pressing up against that wall right now. I trust both of them. And when they tell me that we can have players back, then we'll get them back here as quick as we can. And we'll make sure that we responsibly get to work.
The SoCon up top is incredibly competitive. Over the past, you know, two seasons, it's really made a push to become a multi-bid type of league. What are your thoughts on the conference? And then what do you think will be needed in order to possibly get that second bid into the NCAA tournament?
Well, the conference has made some jumps, but it hasn't been given the notoriety outside that it deserves. Like it's people have acknowledged the fact that, hey, the league has grown to the extent of the growth. Like the world has no idea, yeah. You know, and it's just, it's one of those situations where, you know, the competitiveness of our league from top to bottom, you know, 2 years ago, maybe it was a little tougher at the top. You know, we had four teams at the top that basically had, you know, three of us, I think, had the best years in school history in the same year. I think this past year was more balanced. You know, there was more, you know, it was tougher night in, night out. 2 years ago, I think it was the top four were like 47-1 against the rest of the league. Whereas this year that wasn't quite the case. And, you know, so It's one of those situations where the biggest thing that we've got to get as a league is we got to get more TV opportunity. And we only had one game on national TV this year. And, you know, it's one of those situations where there's other leagues that have more. You know, they've got the Friday night package. They've got, you know, 8, 9, 10, you know, whatever games through the year that gets that exposure. And, I mean, we went up to Johnson City this year. I mean, you couldn't get a seat. I mean, it was so slammed in there. It was 6,500 people in there. Big time college basketball game, and there wasn't many games in the country that the environment was better than that night, and there was no TV, right? And so if we can get that on TV, the amount of sellouts, right? You know, our game of Wofford both ways. I mean, we had 6,000 at our place; they sold it out at their place. That one was on national TV, but like if you can get those environments and you can showcase that we really have big time basketball in our league, I think that's going to be the next step. And I've been really pleased with our new commissioner. You know, he's been great, and you know, he's got a great vision, and he's been really aggressive in the areas that we just discussed. And I don't know all the details, but I know that they're working really, really hard to get the league more exposure and the exposure that it deserves.
So you were recently named fifth on ESPN's 40 under 40 college coaches listing that they had. What does it mean to you to be recognized in that manner?
Well, they didn't have a whole lot to choose from. So, you know, I lucked up, right? And that's what I tell people. Why are we making this big deal of it? There's only so many they could have picked from. But, you know, it's any time you're a part of success, Jamie, it's going to be a lot of different factors that go into it. And, you know, I was fortunate because I was able to take over a program where Coach Medved and our staff did a lot of the heavy lifting, and we made a lot of the tough decisions. And I came in at a time where a lot of that work had been done. And, you know, so I've been fortunate to when I took over, a lot of the culture was heading in the right direction. It was really, really good. And, you know, we did some things to put our stamp on it, and we've continued to try to push the program forward. But, you know, my 3 years, it's been a lot of fun, but there's still work to be done. And so, you know, while it's great to get that honor, in terms of the best thing about it, again, going back to what we're talking about, exposure for the program, that's the best part. When you get something on ESPN at this level, you know, everybody, you know, sees it. And then all of a sudden, you know, what are they doing at Furman? And for us, as we try to build it, that's important. And so, you know, for me personally, you know, that's not a destinational deal for me. And that's not really anything I get a ton of satisfaction in. I just enjoy it for our program, for our players, and that people are starting to take notice of what we're building here, and that we can continue to push it forward.
And lastly here, what is one piece of advice you would give aspiring young coaches trying to, you know, raise in the profession?
Learn the game. Learn the game. I think it's something where we're what I'm seeing a trend of, and I don't like it, but we have so much quick film now that we have way less film study. And there's so many ways to access clips. There's so many videos to watch quickly. We're not watching games, you know, and we're saying we're watching games, we're watching clips, and we're trying to do, you know, the recruiting is obviously critical, right? One thing I always tell guys, do your job so well and so efficiently that you have a little bit of time in the early mornings or late at night to do your next job. And I think that's huge. And that's something I always tried to do. I would try to wake up early, and I would try to, you know, obviously, you know, you got to make sure you're present at home and you're doing what you're having to do with your family. But there's times at night and in the early morning where you can kind of make that next jump. And I just don't think we're learning the game well enough. I don't think, you know, watching full games, you know, I tell people all the time, the last 6 years, I've watched a full season of somebody else in the off season, and people look at me like I'm crazy, you know, and like, I've learned a ton through it. You know, it's been in seeing game flow and seeing game adjustments, and when do they call the timeouts, and what about this situation here, and what plays, you know, as you watch the season, what was their install rate, right? Like, there's so many different, you know, how did they sub? How did they manage their bench? What was their coaching demeanor, right? Like, there's all kind of different ways that you can learn. And it's not just going out and finding the secret play. Like, you got to coach a team. You got to deal with a lot of different dynamics at one time, and it's all coming at you fast. And if you're just specializing in one or two areas of the game, you're going to have a hard time managing it all. And I think we got to work on our coaching better. Mm-hmm. I think that we've really figured out, you know, recruiting is important. It's critical. We've got this network thing, you know, that we're piping a lot of time into, and we're trying to extend our base, but we got to understand we're coaches. And, you know, you've got to make sure that your coaching's right. And I think that's critical.
Bob, I appreciate you spending some time this morning. Is there anything that you want to leave the Furman fans, Bob Ritchie fans, anybody out there, anything you want to leave them with?
Well, just, you know, we're pretty open program. So, you know, you can follow us on Twitter, Instagram at Furman Hoops. And also me personally, Coach Ritchie, R-I-C-H-E-Y on Twitter is probably the easiest way to get a hold of me. My email, if there's any questions from this that you have, is just bob.ritchie, R-I-C-H-E-Y, at furman.edu. And we're wide open. So if there's anything we can do for high school coaches, AAU coaches, if you want to come see a practice, if you want to come spend some time with our staff, just shoot us an email, and we'd love to serve any way we can.
Awesome. Bob, again, thank you so much. I really appreciate you taking the time. It's been awesome to see just all the great stuff you've been doing. You know, very excited about your future as well.
Appreciate it, Jamie. Good talking with you, and have a good day.
Bye. Absolutely. You do the same. Guys, thank you so much for tuning in. For Bob Ritchie, I'm Jamie Shaw on the Absolute Basketball Podcast. We'll see you next time.